Thank you to each of the three panelists. And now if you have questions, I'll try and get the mic to you, but otherwise, just shout. Michael, do you want to just shout?
Okay, I wanted to ask this kid. Yes, during the, you know, the Allison slide, I was just wondering, I suppose, whether you have any things to say maybe about, or whether it's worth getting into narrative in the caesura, which is like prominent in her work, and it's like, I think there's something there about maybe suspense or maybe the riddle, because it's like caesura, like I don't know so much about the history of caesura, like in terms of, but it's not uncommon feature of contemporary writing, and it goes back to old English, at least, where there's like, for me, it's sort of like having read old English riddles, and you see the caesura down there, I can't help feeling like there's some sort of riddle going on, and that relates to narrative and suspense. And so, I feel like I'm just rambling a bit, but you know, like that's quite different, say, to narrative in some of the Stein, for example, or so. I don't know, I think there's an interesting line maybe between, say, the, the early settler women of Australia, like there's some of those that I look at in my book, but they're in Lucy Frost, like, who don't use punctuation, they use caesura, and they're sort of like narratives of finding graphs and stuff, and then it's in Alveston, it's Natalie uses it, like the space a lot, and something else was funny. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of in sort of like, I'm not exactly sure, you might know Pam, is it like Antuani or someone like that? Kind of writes a bit in that mode? Or none of them use, anyway, it doesn't matter. Never mind. Someone.
Well,
no, I'll shut up and let you say something.
No, it's interesting. I guess.
Yeah, that's what it seems.
Late 70s after Australia.
Yeah, Australia and Harry Gregg Street, but I can't remember.
I
So interesting. I think Geordie
says.
Like
something about space. I just want to throw that in terms of your own work, you know.
Geordie says some interesting stuff about her work. Sometimes I feel like what she says about her work is more interesting than the work itself, or kind of like that you fold it into the work, or it kind of, you fold what she says about her work into those gaps, I guess. But she refers to herself as a formalist, and that she always begins with a formal constraint. So with the Book of Ethel, she decided on the 7x7 structure as like pieces of embroidery, and that's a bad example because I think she had Ethel in mind. She had a great grandmother in mind when she was kind of formulating that. But with her other works, she frequently decides on a form, and then will find a character to furnish the form. And that's quite different, I think, to what I do, because I will be drawn. I guess that's what I wanted to illustrate in the start of my paper, is that I'm like really intensely drawn towards a character for various reasons, arbitrary or otherwise, and then will agonise over what form throughout the book is going to meet that character in some kind of significant way. So, like in the Granger work, it was very much kind of dictated by rhythm and the musical line, whereas Marionette was dictated by the visual, and Geordie kind of does the opposite. So maybe that's why I'm drawn to Geordie, because I find that very troubling, that you can start with a form and then go looking for a character that's going to fit into the form.
You did also say that it kind of works, that she was finding form to suit certain aspects of the character. Like when you talk about Ethel, and that David Gilby review of it about the
Wesleyan hymns.
Yeah, finds that there's some hymn voice of shape and song like kind of thing.
And this sort of sparseness or something.
Suited that character as well.
So. Yeah, I guess the question then is perhaps looking at Geordie's work, it's not so much maybe how does the form meet the character, but for her, how is character meeting her form?
Yeah, this is.
And so I find that really exciting in the context of biography studies, because I don't think a lot has been really nutted out or thought about in terms of like a little bit on how form meets character, but like how is the poet kind of acting as a force that brings that initiates a friction between form and content. Yeah, so, and I think maybe the spaces in her work are generating some of that friction. Like, you know, in part, where the reader must enter those gaps in order to kind of create constellations from what she gives us.
But your stuff is a lot more extreme, in a way, than Geordie's, surely. On the page, just looking at it, it's that you. It looks completely different.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's kind of, again, that's sort of what interests me about poetic biography. And what I like about Geordie's work is that each book is different because it has to be different. And there are a lot of American poetic biographers and Canadian poetic biographers whose work I love for doing that same thing, like that you can pick up two traditional biographical texts and formally they're the same book, whereas picking up a poetic biography, for me, the works that I get most excited about is where I feel like there's a kind of textual performative element that is reenacting that character for me or giving me something through feeling, as like the Swenson quote was looking at. I would be horrified if I felt like I was imitating the biographers I like, because that's quite contrary to the project that I'm interested in exploring critically and creatively.
Sorry, what's wrong with imitating?
Because for me, every biographical, poetic biographical work is unique to the character that's the subject, but also is a disguised I. So I'm necessarily different to you. So if you were to write about Percy Grainger, I would hope that it would be totally different. But if it imitated me, that says something about you, so it is different still.
Sure.
Well, does anyone have a quick, immediate question that needs asking? Because we do need to wrap up soon. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, you were talking about with the Women of Botany Bay, what was that one called? Sorry, Jess? The Women of Botany Bay, what was the book called again? I can't remember.
Botany Bay Chapter.
Yeah, an unwillingness to engage with the Indigenous voices in this and that kind of aspect. And I was wondering, with your own work of the Percy Grainger Suite, how... Now I've gone through around the museum lots, and then I read that his memoirs or the scraps was there, and I was kind of blown away how the museum leaves out his full blown racism, yeah, and how you maybe engaged or couldn't engage, or because I tried to write a story from that, and yeah, like the blue eyed English, for example, which I found kind of just psychotic.
Oh, a quick answer. So Percy was extremely racist and made. But part of the issue, and it took me 7 years to write that book, which was partly just kind of dealing with all that stuff. I didn't ignore it in my work. I'm quite fascinated by how someone, again, can be sort of so interesting in one area, and you can be so kind of like unashamedly attracted to them in one area, and then like completely horrified by other aspects of their character. Does that mean that I completely avoid that character? Or does it mean that I have a responsibility in how I represent that? So that's kind of what I was trying to do.
Yeah, cool.
Ties in nicely with what Fiona said about
you
the
You made fine and not me.
Mathematician.
You mean Have we got time? I wanted to thank Dion for a paper, and I would say that one of the things about this conference is that I would write a different poem now. I would not write that poem now. I kind of think it was a poem about inheritances, and I think sort of like listening to the analysis of the poem now, it raises interesting questions about choice versus imposition, and what we choose to inherit or see as our inheritance, and whether in some ways, you know, that there are, you know, different sort of histories of sort of imperialising poetries, and you know, that was meant to be foregrounding, not least difficult relationship to William Palace Williams and, you know, Dr. Williams' daughters. But then, what does it mean for an Australian then to have that a looming American imaginary? But you know, I think in some respects, it made me think of Pete's paper yesterday, and thinking about, you know, in some respects, that it becomes a poem about extraction rather than proliferation. That in some respects, it's actually doing damaging work, which now I probably wouldn't write. Because I think there does need to be, you know, even if there are inheritances of difficulty, that perhaps it's more worth spending your time dealing with those and sort of like engaging with those than ones which are perhaps more distant. So there's that sort of an ethics of, I suppose, how we're shaped in terms of poetic subjectivity. I just wanted to say that this conference has actually made me think about, you know, thinking about qualities of relationality, that those inheritances, we do have choices about, you know, what we write about and how we do.
I think that's what gets lost when you're talking about a few poems from a collection. It's like it's part of the whole process that's quite lengthy, and so, you know, you can't take, it's not like you can't take a poem to read for the whole of the collection. And also, I think it's an awesome poem, and it sets up all these problems. You know, this is what's at stake, and you can almost kind of, this is what we need to do. Mathematically, if you need to map it out, we need to think about, you know, what Pete was saying, the decolonisation, think about where we are in relation to the world, but how to have a national poetics that isn't pre-invented, you know, so it'll be like constructed, but with a universal kind of aim, or one that's for all.
Can I throw something out there?
Yeah.
But Red Roses as well, you talk about it as fiction. She's talked about it as herself, which is not necessarily true, as non-fiction.
Oh.
And that it's like, it circles back where she comes through her mother's legs at the end, and it goes back to the beginning, and how it has that kind of cyclical, there's no punctuation throughout the whole novel, so it's just exhausting. Anyway.
Sure.
Well,
we can carry on long into the night. Let's thank all our panelists.